Hello, and welcome to the Should I Go See It podcast, where every other Friday we take a deeper dive into the one-sentence reviews on shouldigoseeit.com. This week we'll be discussing Anora, Heretic, and Here. I'm your host, Bill George. With me today, as always, AJ Rebecki and super producer Craig Stanton.
Me, hello.
Hi, Bill.
Gentlemen, hello. How are we?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing great.
How are you all?
I'm doing great.
Yeah?
Yeah. I got something to show you guys. I know this is not a visual medium.
Is it your...
Check this out.
Wow, look at that.
Wow.
This is, I want to thank the Academy.
For ADA compliance, Bill is holding up a sculpture, 3D printed version of the Oscar.
Yes.
Literally, the Academy an Oscar. Award. The Academy Award.
It appears to be carved out of a long potato.
Or someone's
Based on
femur.
The color,
it's
I
got
would
that
say,
bronze, that beautiful bronze-ish, goldish.
Yeah,
hue.
Wouldn't call it gold. Wouldn't call no. it gold.
I mean, that's the idea.
It's more like a patina, like a pewter.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What does it say on the bottom of?
There's nothing
the
on the
Awards.
Base. It's just a black base.
Okay.
But well,
how's the weight? How's the heft?
It's light. I mean, it's light. It's 3D printed, so it's.
Can you put your whole hand around the chest area? Like, does it your hand fit around it nicely?
Yeah, sure. But just like you're holding it up, you always hold the bottom of it, and then you do that whole thing. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's get to the.
Yeah. So
why do you have one?
So I recently changed locations at work, and the team that I was working with gave me a really nice send off. Super nice. And shout out to Albie, one of our team members there. He 3D printed me this as a parting gift before I left. And I thought that was very nice and perfectly on brand for our show and my love of cinema. So thought you boys would appreciate it.
Did you shed a few tears when you left your old job?
I did. I sure did.
Gonna miss
gonna miss everyone there. But, you know, things change. Nothing lasts forever. And we're... starting a new chapter, different location. So
we
go from there.
On
but,
to Cincinnati.
Wanted to shout him out, and I appreciate that. And I thought it was funny for the pod.
That's nice.
But that's what's going on with me. What's up with you guys?
We're in the throes of November.
You got your tree up yet?
It was up November 1st. We took down the Christmas decoration, the Halloween decorations. Christmas went up.
Hot swapped them for the Christmas stuff.
Day after Halloween, we were fucking dialed in. Christmas stuff is up. Work, because this month is a little crazy with the holidays and stuff. You're trying to fit a whole bunch of, you know, 4 weeks of work into a 2.5 week window, which can be a little tough. But yep. I'm excited for the holidays to unwind a little bit, spend some time with friends and family, the Yuletide Carol.
Watch your Lifetime movies.
You watch my Hallmark movies, Bill. You
Hallmark,
watch your fucking
excuse me.
Lifetime. What am I, a fucking 80-year-old woman?
I apologize for the mix-up.
You watch your mouth. I'm good. Boys, good. Craig, how are you?
Fine. I'm going to say fine. Everything is fine.
Love it.
Yes, we are an entertainment podcast. We
are excited to be
podcast.
Here. I'm excited to be here in our little sandbox where we can play with our toys here in the sandbox.
Yes.
I understood.
40 minutes.
I understood.
All right, Bill, we got a really light episode today. So why don't we jump in with a little follow-up? You watch anything last few weeks?
The only things I watched are the things that we will get to later on the docket in this episode. So I don't have any quick follows as of right now. So I'll probably pass that off to y'all.
What about you, Age?
I don't know. Someone wrote Gilmore Girls in the show notes.
Yeah, I got to ask you guys about Gilmore Girls. You ever watch Gilmore Girls?
Nope.
I have seen clips. I remember in college, I was with someone who really liked it. But whenever I would watch it, I just thought the acting was the worst acting I'd ever seen in my life. And it really turned me off. But I understand it has quite the cult following.
Quite. We've been watching it over here.
Uh-huh.
We're sort of like, we were watching The Penguin, of course, like we've been talking about last few weeks, but we didn't really have like just kind of like a throw it on, like whatever show.
My wife loves
Gilmore Girls. And so I was like, you know what? I'll just jump in there. She's been watching it without me. So it's not like we're like watching it like that, but like, it's just what's been on the last couple weeks in our household. Uh-huh. It's a pretty... It might be the worst show I've ever seen. The tone of it really bums me out. Because it's like not a comedy, but it's not a drama. It's like somewhere in between. That's kind of in this no man's land. Like if you
coined the phrase dramedy, comedy.
No,
drama?
But it's neither. It's not both. It's neither. That's okay. The problem. It is neither truly a drama, nor is it a. Nor are there any funny parts at all. A dramedy would imply to me that it's both. This is neither. But what's interesting about it is because it's neither, it has this very particular tone, and like that tone has become in these trying times a bit of a comfort. Like you know exactly what you're going to get. It has this super consistent quality to it of like pithy, fast dialogue that again will neither make you laugh nor cry. You just kind of like watch it move along, and like you're watching traffic. And like you watch an episode and you say, yeah, sure, I guess I'll have another. And it's like, it's crazy. It's like eating popcorn. You can go through buckets and buckets and never get full, you know?
I have definitely heard people that love it think of it in Sorkin-esque terms, in terms of the quick writing, quick delivery, and also kind of West Wing-ish in that you are just like, you just want to, you end up connecting with that world as wanting to spend time in that world, like it's an escape of sorts for people that love it at least.
Yeah, I mean, I get that escapee quality, again, just because, like I said, like, it is so, like, it's so consistent in tone that, like, you just know exactly what you're going to get, and you get it for 40 minutes. Sorkin-esque is generous.
Sure.
I mean, yes, the dialogue is fast and, like, unrealistically quick, and everybody's just constantly on it all the time, but, yeah, I mean, that's... I wouldn't say Sorkin-esque. I would just say fast moving. The only thing
I know about the Gilmore Girls is I feel like in high school there was like groups of girls that watched specific shows. You know what I mean? There was like the group of girls that watched like the Gilmore Girls and Friends. And then there was like that group that watched like the OC and like...
Or like Grey's Anatomy was a huge one.
Yeah, like that sexually charged one. And then there was like the, like the theater kids who watched like The Office, and they had like their own little thing, you know? Yeah. But that's the only I can proudly say I've never seen an episode of the Gilmore Girls.
Yeah. What's also crazy about it is it's long. They're like hour long episodes or like 40 to 50 minute long episodes, but the amount of episodes that there are is like consistent with sitcoms. Like there's like 25 episodes in each season.
Old school TV. Yep.
Straight. Oh, the other thing I'll say about Gilmore Girls is it's shot. It's like it was on from like 2000 to 2007 or something like that. And I don't know enough to know about this. AJ, maybe you could put eyes on it and tell me. But like it looks really nice. It's like kind of filmic. Maybe they were shooting it on film and editing it digitally or something. I don't know. But like just the look of the show is kind of nice and pleasing. Like it's pre-HD. Or maybe I'm watching like remastered ones for Netflix or whatever.
Yeah, I'm sure they upscaled it.
But it's just like a really nice looking, it's just really nicely shot. It's very like pleasing to look at with your eyes.
Credit to the cinematographer on that one.
It was shot on 16 Super 16 film.
Yeah, okay. That's kind of what I thought. I was like early aughts, like they definitely wouldn't have been editing it in an analog way, but I could believe that they were shooting it on film and then like dumping it down
digitizing
to digital for editing and whatever. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. Cool. It's nice. It does look nice.
Speaking of tech specs, I actually DM'd Maria Rucci last night because I was watching El Penguin. And I said,
friend of the show, Maria Rucci.
Friend of the show, Maria Rucci. I was like, dog, help me out with this. I said, I need your take on Hawk anamorphic. Remember when, so in The Penguin and in Shogun, we talked about it, that the edges are vignetted and the bokeh in the background, like everything swirls from the edges.
Uh-huh.
Well, like there's a type of lens called a Hawk anamorphic lens, which is like, that is like the fucking hallmark look of it. And I said, I need your take with the swirling bokeh and shallow depth of field. Shogun was borderline tough to watch and they're doing the same thing on The Penguin. She replied, she hasn't watched either show yet, but she knows what they were shot on, the Alexa LF, and she says it can be kind of crutchy, and it's just the look that people are going for now. Kind of a crutch, she says. That's been Tech Talk with Maria Rucci. This has been Tech Talk.
I concur with the Shogun, especially the pilot of Shogun, where they were just throwing everything but the kitchen sink at it just to like get a look. But I feel like Shogun calmed it down, and I did not bump on it with the Penguin. I think maybe because the Batman stylistically set the template, so I was already used to it, so I like knew the world I was going into, and it was just a continuation. But I was fine with the Penguin visually.
Okay,
that's my take. We'll talk more about the Penguin, but
that's been Tech Talk. All right, no in the news because Hollywood, everyone is deactivating their Twitter and is remaining silent. So let's go to our newest segment. IDZI, which Craig stands for.
I didn't see it. Or I did see it. Whichever one you please.
From didn't to did. So,
yes, didn't to
Bill,
did. Yes.
We're the whole idea of this segment is we're filling in our filmatic blind spots.
Yes.
You went in and watched a film, Blast from the Past, a classic. Mm-hmm. You watched Gone with the Wind. Starring old fake mouth Clark Gable. Can you give me some thoughts around Gone with the Wind?
Okay, so we're doing this segment. It's a good excuse to go back and fill in these things. And I was trying to figure out what I should watch for this. And I went back to the AFI, American Film Institute, list of 100 movies, greatest 100 movies. Mm. So I went through that and I filled out the little quiz. And I've already seen more than half of them, so I felt good about myself for that. But there were definitely some like earlier ones like Gone with the Wind being like the number 4 greatest movie ever, according to the Film Institute, that I had not seen. So I was like, all right,
okay,
I'm going to do it. I'm just going to work through this list and grab the ones that I think are the most important first, and we'll get through it. So Gone with the Wind, didn't love it. I'm going to put that out there first.
Let me write that down.
I will say that.
Love it.
Gorgeously shot, like the Panavision, the color, the depth, like that element of it, that old school filmmaking, beautiful. Beautiful movie.
Stupid question. It's in color, not black and white?
Correct. It is color. Technicolor. And so they do a lot of amazing things with that. It's known for a couple classic shots that I had seen throughout my just years of pop culture osmosis. And so it was beautiful. It lived up to the hype there. The movie itself, honestly, kind of frustrating to watch. It was the pace and the writing is obviously tough nowadays. That's not necessarily it, though. I mean, I'm okay with slower paced movies. I'm okay with older movies. I'm not anti-old movie. But this in particular was very slow. There's also a constant orchestration. Like the original score is always playing. And that started to drive me nuts. And the movie itself just felt loud. It felt like people were shouting. The entire movie was just people shouting at each other. I don't know. For 3 hours and 45 minutes, not the most entertaining experience.
It's that long?
It's four yes. hours long?
Yes.
What and so, format was that even delivered on originally? Calendars?
Multiple film reels with an intermission. And obviously there are some great scenes in it, some classic lines like, you know, Franklin, my dear, I don't give a damn, or I'll never go hungry again. But at the end of the day, all the things I knew about Gone with the Wind through, again, seeing it clips here and there or learning about it. I've read books about film history that I've read entire chapters about the making of Gone with the Wind. Like everything I already knew about it was enough for me. I didn't need to sit through all 3 hours and 45 minutes of the movie itself. Wow. I got it already. I already had it. So that's kind of where it just also this is the days where a lot of the actors are coming over from stage. So it just, everything felt very big. I think it's part of why the movie is so loud. It's just like a lot of big acting before we get into more naturalistic performances that we're used to now. So that all stood out to me. I don't know. Gone with the Wind. I guess I'm glad I saw it. I can check it off the list of AFI's list. I can say I have seen Gone with the Wind because it did feel a little embarrassing not being able to say that previously as a film critic. But man, it was a bit of a slog to get through.
Thank you for your service. So yeah,
I've only seen.
What else is there to say?
Yeah, I mean, hell yeah, brother.
Yeah,
I've like you said, the cultural osmosis. I've you know, you've seen clips and stuff like that. I've never really seen it. The only thing I know is Clark Gable, the star. Yeah,
what's your beef with Clark Gable?
He was the best part of the movie.
So he had a rotten mouth, Craig. True rotten mouth. He had
literally.
Not a euphemism.
No, it is all his teeth pulled. He wore dentures that he refused to clean. And apparently he was like one of the grossest people to stand next to within like 12 to 24 inches. And every time after I heard that and learned it and then watched like clips that came up on like TV and stuff like that, I was like, oh, imagine standing next to that guy. Yuck.
Yeesh. Here's what I'm going to say about that.
What?
This man was born in 1901.
Okay.
As someone with fake teeth myself, boy, am I glad it's not the early 20th century every time I go to the dentist to get these fucking things worked on.
Yeah.
You know, that's a tough draw to have that particular problem in
that particular time.
In that particular time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you, Bill.
So that's what I didn't see that now I did see. AJ, what about you?
Well, I got kind of friend bullied by both of you, and you said you should really give the Penguin a true shot. So mm-hmm. I said, you know what, boys? I'll do it for you. And I did. I'm about halfway through El Penguin.
El Penguin.
And boys, I fucking love this show. It's so good. We talked about the shooting things aside and some of the choices from a cinematographer standpoint, I can get past that. But I mean, story, pace, the stakes. The worst part of the entire series was the first 15 or 20 minutes of the first episode. And then after that, it just launches like a rocket. And every single turn of the script is like something new and like outrageous, but still mm-hmm. feels like it's not totally crazy. Just really well done. It feels like a really good Batman movie as a TV show. And I think being on HBO Max with the nudity and the gratuitous violence and the language just brings you more into that gritty world than a PG-13, you know, blockbuster could ever do.
Yep. I agree.
That's my take.
I feel like you could really think about it in terms of the show before Sophia is introduced is fine. And once she becomes like the central character, or at least on the same level as Oz, the show is like incredible.
10 times better.
You know, because it takes a while for her to like get introduced and then not only be introduced, but become a major player.
Yep.
But whatever episode that happens in, I'm not really sure. But there's, there's like
the first episode,
pre-Sophia times, and then there's like once she's in the mix for real, shit
she's the
just
draw.
Fucking goes.
Well, that's the first episode's almost an hour and a half long, hour and 20 minutes. And yeah, that happens the first episode. And that whole time, she kind of appears. She's like, hey, I'm here. And
I
then
exist.
She appears again outside his car and was like, hey, what happened to your car? And then it's like, you're going to come to lunch with me, right? And the whole time my hands are like, why am I so sweaty around this woman? Like, I don't understand what's happening. And then that whole scene of like her eating in front of him and then talking and then drinking and the people in the restaurant. It's just so well done.
So good.
Yeah, and the only thing I will say, Bill, is because she was in The Long Halloween. She is the hangman killer. I wish they were able to basically remove, and you said this, is like figure out how to make Batman Part One with Pattinson the actual like The Long Halloween graphic novel. Like do that. And then I think it would have been just a really good, transition to Batman Part Two and kind of fill in the gaps of what happened with Sophia when she went to Arkham after the events of The Long Halloween. I just feel like that was a little bit of a miss, or hindsight's 20/20. Now that you're kind of in it and see her character, you're like, damn, I wish she really was part of the first film.
Yeah, and I think the magic of this show, to a degree, at least for Warner Brothers, I'm sure, is the fact that the number of people who I have talked to who have watched this show and then said, because of this, I went back and I rewatched The Batman, or this makes me like The Batman more. Like, I've heard that from more than a handful of people. So Warner Brothers and DC must be thrilled, because The Batman certainly got a pretty strong reception. But the fact that now there's this revisiting is just going to add so much more hype for The Batman 2 that they're going to be flush with cash when that movie comes out. And Warner Brothers has also talked about the ratings for The Penguin have been fantastic. They've gotten better week over week, and I think the finale set a new record for that show. So the fact that many people are tuning in and that many people are revisiting the movie, like the hype for The Batman 2 once like trailers start to come out for that is going to be through the roof.
Yeah, I mean, they just you know, this is what they've been waiting for years to compete with the, you know, the MCU and those original shows on Disney Plus. And I just feel like they're doing a really good job. Damn, it makes me want to go back and read the Long Halloween.
Yeah.
For those who aren't graphic novel fans, this was one of the first ones that I picked up, or my friend Mike told me about, that was like, you need to read this from start to finish. And I was like, holy fuck, this is great. Incredible.
All right, well, we can't wait to hear more of your thoughts when you're done with the show, as Craig and I are. So, a lot to keep talking about on that one.
Idzy, baby. Idzy. Okay, let's go on to the Should I Go See It segment. This week, we're going to be talking about three films. The first one is Anora, which is Spanish for...
That now. Was what? That's ahora.
No, that's ahora.
Here. No, that's now.
No, now is.
I think it means honor in Latin. Bill, does that change things? Let's dive into it. Anora, a young sex worker from Brooklyn, meets and impulsively marries the son of an oligarch. Once news reaches the homeland, her fairy tale is threatened as his parents set out for New York to get the marriage annulled. Bill, should I go see it?
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
This is a about it. It seems remarkable. Sexually charged.
Oh, for sure. It's a remarkable film. And it is truly like a film, like to use that phrase. And shout out to Sean Baker. He wrote, directed, and edited it. So it's one of those movies that just has a cohesive vision through and through. And so to give you the setup, Mikey Madison stars and carries the movie. Like this, like she gives an Oscar nomination potential performance here. I didn't recognize her at first, and then I kind of went on IMDb afterwards. I'm like, what do I know her for? Like, she was so incredible. Like, what has she been in? And she was one of the intruders, the home intruders in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood when they invade Brad Pitt's house. She was one of them. Because I was like, Sadie. I recognize her somehow. But she stars as a stripper, and the opening of the movie, the montage, kind of takes us through a typical night for her moving through the club. And then her boss says, look, there's a high roller here who wants someone who speaks Russian. And she speaks a little bit of it because of her grandmother, so they get her. So she meets this young guy. He likes her. She likes the opportunity that he presents because he's, you know, this young Russian rich kid, basically. And so it becomes this little whirlwind romance, and you get to see people with tons of money doing things that they do when they're rich, which is always fun to watch. And sort of act one ends with the Russian parents back home hearing through the tabloids that their son off in New York is marrying a quote unquote prostitute. And they're like, whoa, 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 what? Because he falls in love with her and asks her to marry him so he can get a green card and not have to go back to Russia. Whoa. So that's kind of the first act. That's the setup, is them falling for each other and then wanting to get married. And then the Russians find out about it and shit gets sideways real fast. And so then we, along with the character of Anora, are kind of swept up into this world of this Russian oligarch and like, who are these people and why are they trying to boss her around? And she's like a strong...
independent woman,
strong-headed New Yorker, and she's fighting them tooth and nail. There's a lot of comedy in it too, but it also has a lot of like manic energy. It kicks into like an Uncut Gems mode where it's just like go, 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 go as they try to figure things out. And there's a lot of humor in it, a lot of dry sense of humor, dark sense of humor. And it's great. It's great. She gives us like a fierce performance. She's like 1000% in it the entire time and sells it. And the soundtrack's perfect. There's some licensing music that works really well, plus the original score. It's very cinema verite. Like, it feels like you're in New York. There's handheld cameras. You're just running around with them. All the performances are dialed in. Like, it's great. It's just a great, great movie.
I love that.
And it's a transportive movie. Like, it was one of those movies where I forgot my life existed around it. I was just, like, dialed into this for 2 hours, which is, like, the highest... compliment I can give it. No intrusive thoughts. Nothing else popped into my head while I was watching this movie. I was just there.
Okay. So is this a perfect movie?
I'd have to look at it again, but I already have my best of list for the year kind of going since we're towards the end, and it's already in there for sure. Where I place it is going to depend, but it's up there.
Anything you do differently with the film?
I don't know. I mean, I'd have to see it again to be sure. I mean, you know, like my normal complaint about all movies, you could probably trim it a little bit when they're kind of running around in Act 2. You might be able to tighten it up, but I'm not going to, I wouldn't hold that too much against it. I loved it. Just very, very
strong,
good.
Strong performances from his Russian parents.
Yeah, they're not in it a ton, but they're good. But the Russian oligarch has kind of boots on the ground to keep tabs of his son. So the muscle, the henchmen, whatever you want to call them, they are fantastic. I mean, everybody in it's fantastic.
Love it. Great.
Great. Okay,
no, it's good to see some positive portrayals of oligarchs. You know, it's like just these guys, they're trying their best.
They're family men and women. Family
at the
people.
End of the day, I welcome the new regime.
The Russian mob. Yep.
All right, let's go on to our second film, Heretic. According to IMDb.com, two young religious women are drawn into a game of cat and mouse in the house of a strange man. Bill, should I go see it? Hugh Grant's kind of creepy, huh?
He's so good. He's so good as the villain. Because, you know, we know Hugh Grant as the rom-com charmer. And so to have him be like the smarmy villain in the movie, oh, God, he crushes it. This is a thriller from A24.
Of course it is.
Like a faith-based thriller, if you will. Ooh. So like you said, so he invites in two Mormon missionaries played by Sophie Thatcher and Chloe East, who are both phenomenal. Invites them into the house to talk about their faith and so that they can share more about the Church of Latter-day Saints with him. And they say, hey, there has to be a woman present for us to come in and talk to you. And he's like, oh, my wife's in the kitchen. Like, she'll be right out. She's kind of shy. And they're like, okay. So they sit down. Then the door shuts behind. And we're fucking off to the races at that point.
Oh, my God.
Because there's no wife spoiler, as you can tell. So things aren't what they seem. He kind of traps them in. And I hesitate to say like he tortures them because it's not that type of movie. It's not like a physical torture. It's not like a Saw movie, but it's more like spiritual and emotional. Like he never ties them down to chairs or anything like that, like you'd expect. But the movie is just super clever. He's talking to them about faith. He's talking to them about the one true religion, if there is one. And like he writes on the two doors like disbelief and belief, and he's like, you need to actually decide what you actually think. And
oh my God,
pick a door to go through if you want to try to leave. And like it just becomes this, and they try to push back, and it becomes like such great writing. Oh God, it was great. And with Hugh Grant kind of just chewing the scenery and giving these monologues about organized religion and his quest to find the one true religion and forcing them to question their faith. It's just a lot of great writing, great performances. Spellbinding. It was spellbinding.
Spellbinding, folks.
Yes.
He said it. Well, it was written by the two guys that wrote The Quiet Place. Mm-hmm. So I feel like, you know, if you're into that kind of vibe, grounded, I feel like it's grounded yet like something is not right. You know what I mean? Like it's grounded in reality plus some. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's not crazy. It's not over the top.
Yes.
By any means. So yeah, no, it is. It's definitely a more.
But you're still like, is this like, would this really happen? Do you ever feel like you're like, how did they get themselves in this place?
No, they sell it pretty well. Like it's definitely a slow burn, like a ramp up to when they kind of get. You can kind of see how they are trying to be polite and they are trying to talk their way out of these situations, as you would if you're a missionary trying to, you know, share the gospel of whatever your faith is. Like you're gonna try to be as nice and as accommodating as possible. And then you can see that like, and then that takes the turn and they're like, we got to get out of here. And then you see the things that he put in place to not let them get out of here. And yeah, you're just along for the ride. It's really quite good. I liked it a lot.
I love that.
I don't want to say too much about it just because the rest of it is obviously the twists and turns of the drama and what makes it a thriller. But I thought it was fantastic.
Is it a spooky season film? Like, do I need to wait till next year to come around to be like, oh, I'm going to pop on this Hugh Grant sexual mind thriller?
No, I think you can watch it now. I mean, it takes place part of the one element of them being trapped, so to speak, is also there's a snowstorm during this. So it could work as a winter movie as well.
Nice Christmas psychological thriller.
Yeah, about faith. Perfect for Christmas.
You know, it's good to see a positive portrayal of a religious wacko imparting his overzealous and problematic views on unwilling people. It's really great. It's really great to see.
You
I think we need
it.
More of those types of portrayals of art.
Maybe the play is you watch Conclave and Heretic back to back.
Ooh, great double feature. Because like one's a little pulpy, one's a little more serious. Yes, yes. I love that play.
That might be my play. Okay. Last but not least, I can't believe we're talking about this. I can't believe they actually greenlit this fucking movie here.
I have so much to say on this movie. Like, my notes are substantial, so get ready.
According to IMDb.com, here is a generational story about families and the special place they inhabit, sharing in love, loss, laughter, and life. From visionary director, Robert Zemeckis, who I thought was dead, is not. Bill,
no, very much alive.
Should I go see it?
I gave it a yes, AJ, much to your disdain.
It looks so fucking stupid. No, it looks so dumb.
Let me explain. So,
okay,
Tom Hanks, Robin Wright, Robert Zemeckis reuniting after Forrest Gump. And it is a high concept movie. The idea is we follow the life of one patch of land in the United States, basically one house and the people that occupy it. So the camera stays in one position the entire film. And they use a lot of clever editing to jump around the narrative. Like sometimes it's just dissolves or morphs, but most of the time they have these, like they put a window, like a white bordered window around a part of the footage. And so in the window is that same spot, but a different time frame table. And the rest is the other time table. And then they like fade fully. It's like panels of a comic book, essentially, they use as transitions. And you got to kind of see it, but it's super clever, really interesting idea. It's something I've never seen before, which is a big factor in giving it a yes. But he also paints himself into a corner with this concept that creates problems that he now has to solve as the director.
Give me an example.
One of this is pacing. Because like if the camera never moves, and there's no feeling of motion ever, how do you make this movie not feel boring after a while or stale? And the way he gets around that is the amount of editing. I would guess, I have no data on this, just my watching of movies.
Yes.
I would guess with the exception of the final scene, I don't think there's a single scene in this movie that's more than a minute. I think they probably last 30 seconds on average every scene. Like there's a shit ton of scenes. They're just cutting constantly or morphing or doing whatever they're doing. Most of that is around one family because one family owns the house for a long period of time. And you follow, that's the Tom Hanks family where his father's played by Paul Bettany. He comes home from World War II. He buys the house with the GI Bill and him and his wife, Kelly Riley is the actress. They end up having kids. That kid grows up to be Tom Hanks. He marries Robin Wright. They have kids. And so you watch like three generations through the house, right? Mm. And they jump around in timetable. But then they add in some more history and kind of to diversify what you're seeing on screen. So there's also Native Americans that are on that plot of land before there's even a house. When the house is first built in 1900, there's a little storyline with a family living there then. There's a Bohemian family that lives there in the 30s before Paul Bettany buys it. And then there's another family that takes it over in 2020 or whatever towards the end. So there's like six or seven narratives essentially that they're just cutting between telling this story. So it keeps it active and lively. And the movie opens with like fucking dinosaurs on the plot of land and they go through like a creation of life time lapse. Kind of like in Darren Aronofsky's movie Noah or the movie adaptation. There's like a primordial ooze time lapse. Anyway, so they establish all these timelines and they just jump back and forth between them. And it's kind of a meditation on families, relationships, America. Like they'll show a scene from the modern family and something that happens. And they show a similar scene and how it played out in the 20s. And like you kind of see the difference there. And so it's really interesting, but it's a real mixed bag in terms of actual quality. And what I mean by that,
yeah,
is the writing, almost all the writing feels like a first draft. Like it just feels like this placeholder dialogue that they'll like fix later. Like there's literally in the 1920 section, the husband is an aspiring pilot. This is at the dawn of man-made flight. And so there's a scene where he literally says to the wife, like, gee, Pauline, I'm telling you, aeroplanes are the future. It's like,
Stop.
And maybe there's an actor in the world that can sell that. But when I'm sitting there in the theater, I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Because the camera can't move. So they can't show. It's all tell. Because you're just stuck in this house. So they have to tell you about the things that are happening.
To be clear, the camera
around.
Can move. They chose not to.
Yeah.
Camera very much can move.
They locked it off for an hour and 44 minutes. That's not on me. That's on them.
So they have to tell you what's going on in the outside world and tell you about certain events that are happening outside. And those don't work. But that being said, when there are scenes that are in the house and there are quieter scenes, like there's a scene later on in the movie, older Tom Hanks on a telephone call that feels like, oh, you're just like eavesdropping on this like real life situation. Like some scenes are really good like that. And they really give you an insight into life. And then some scenes are super hacky. Like most of the history ones are super on the nose and hacky and poorly written. So if I were making the movie, I would cut all those and just stick with just following the three generations of one family, cut down the movie from an hour and 45 to like an hour 20, and you'd be fine. And I think that not only is the writing tricky, some of the acting is not the best because, again, it feels like a stage play, and so they treat it like a stage play. So they, again, very big acting. It doesn't feel as real. But Tom Hanks and Robin Wright are very good. They understood the assignment, to use a phrase. And so there are some sequences that are really, really good. And it's such a clever idea, really well executed. I just think the script needed a lot of work and some of the acting needed a lot of work. So it was mixed, but overall I landed on yes.
Wow. I had a few thoughts.
Please.
No, Bill, keep going.
No, that's it. I've already said too much. Those are my thoughts.
Okay. Time. 6 minutes and 22 seconds. Okay. All right. Well, Bill, thank you for all of your thoughts. Here are mine. I've basically now say this every episode. There are some ideas that are not meant for full feature ideas. They're either short movies or they're ad campaigns. This would have been a fucking banger of an ad campaign for like a Sherwin Williams who's been around for 1866. Like, yeah. Things change throughout the years, but like our paint lasts forever. The fact that you had your attention on that screen for an hour and 44 minutes is insane. Insane.
That's where the cutting comes in. They do a nice job keeping it moving for the most part. Again, there's some dragging parts, especially the old parts. But the other thing that will drive you nuts, AJ, is the aging and de-aging.
Oh, yeah.
Because they do a lot of that. Because you got to show Tom Hanks
getting older,
the years, and Robin Wright through the years. And I didn't bump on it. I actually did a pretty impressive job. I think the hardest one was like the youngest Tom Hanks. Still looked old because you can only make him so young. You can't fucking make Tom Hanks a teenager now, even if you, I don't care what quantum computer you're using, you're not going to get him down. So he still looks kind of old, but they did a pretty good job with that. I thought they handled it fine.
Well, I'm not going to go there for here. So I am going to skip it. Robert Zemeckis, cool visionary, dumb idea. Yeah, I'm just not impressed. As soon as I saw this commercial, I think I texted you. I was like, this movie looks really dumb. So dumb. And the time lapse and the commercial with like the dinosaurs getting hit by asteroids and then, you know, fucking Native Americans fighting off people and then the Civil War and then Main Street America. It's like, come the fuck on.
They have an American Revolution timeline I forgot to mention where like the house across the street from them used to belong to
where the Redcoats lived.
Where Ben Franklin's kid. And so they're talking about the revolution. Yep. Like that stuff's bad.
Wait, what?
Like,
Ben Franklin's kid was their neighbor?
Yeah. So in the bay window of the house, you see like a bigger house across the street. Before their house is built, there's scenes where you're just like looking. You're in an open field looking at that big house, and that belonged to Ben Franklin's illegitimate son or something. And so there's a history part of it. And I forgot those scenes were honestly the worst ones were the revolutionary scenes where like someone comes by on a horse and is like, news from the Capitol, the war's over.
Merci, a monorail.
It's like, again, first draft, all the writing is just fucking first draft placeholder text.
So cool if like someone just shot a cannon through that fucking bay window or something like that,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Really shake things up. Does Tom Hanks die?
No.
Does Robin Wright die? Someone has to have a horrible accident in the family, right? Like someone gets
Oh, sure. Yeah.
sick and dies or something like
that. Yes, a couple of those mixed in. Peppered in.
peppered in.
Okay. And they're
hundreds of years. Of course, people die.
Yeah, you got the modern one, and then you got fucking someone dying from influenza. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they jump back and forth. You get it all. Mm.
Be cool if it was dysentery. All right. I don't want to talk about this film anymore. Okay. Next segment, Netflix and Bill. What are we watching?
I've been talking a while.
You know what? You've been talking a lot.
I've been talking a while. Why don't you take the lead?
Hannah and I binged the new, what's her name?
Kristen Bell. Lawrence.
Kristen Bell show. Nobody Wants This on Netflix.
Nice.
Had that recommended to me a number of times. Tell me more.
Here's my thing. You ready for this? For some reason, I want to not like Kristen Bell, but every time I watch her in something, I am completely just like, oh, like I think I'm falling in love with Kristen Bell. She's fantastic.
How can you not? Adorable.
Her range is incredible. The way she presents herself on screen, like she can really act. And the chemistry that she has with Adam Brody, who plays Noah, her love interest, her rabbi love interest, is fucking amazing. He's fantastic. The entire cast is amazing. The comedy is truly like laugh out loud funny. They just did a really good job with this TV show, and I think you should watch it.
Can you give me the concept again, the premise?
So Kristen Bell and her sister, who is Justine Loop, who is Connor's wife in Succession. Yeah. They have
Connor
a podcast.
Roy's.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Yeah. They have like a podcast, like a almost like a Call Her Daddy podcast.
It's like two women irreverent podcast, very Call Her Daddy-ish.
Yeah. Wait, Craig, have you watched this as well?
Christy watched it and I jumped in like four episodes in and like finished it out with her. So okay. Yes-ish.
Okay. Yeah. It's just like, you know, like next week we're gonna have a sex therapist and we're gonna try her new dildo that she came out like that's like the kind of podcasting that they do.
Okay.
And she's like down on her luck, same old kind of dates, and then she goes to a dinner party and meets this guy, this rabbi who's played by Adam Brody, and they kind of hit it off, and then it's just this like duality of like her trying to get mingled with his very conservative Jewish family and the temple, and then him trying to like come to terms with this like very free-spirited, very open, very confident, and kind of figuring out how that works together. And they come from like basically opposites.
Yeah, it's like an odd couple situation.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, sure.
But they works. The good thing is like their chemistry so well together that everything is kind of falling apart around them. Like there's more family dynamics rather than like their bad dynamic, so to speak. And it just makes for a really good TV. It's good. It's a good show.
Okay.
I like
it. They leave that open for multiple seasons to come?
Oh, yeah. And then, of course, you know, we watched it maybe 3 weeks after it came out, but there was a bumper at the end that was like, you know, renewed for season two, or like, we can't wait to see you back for season two.
Oh, they already added that to the podcast file?
Okay. Oh, yeah. Ready to roll.
Yeah. They want to keep you paying that subscription while they make it.
They're locked in. Yeah.
Okay.
So,
half hour episodes, right?
Half hour episodes. I love Jewish humor. I think it was like the whole thing was just so well written and so well put together. I cannot recommend it enough.
I'm not a big show guy lately. Like Penguin's literally the only show I was watching.
I know,
watching.
But if you're like looking for some like levity and some like a rom-com where you're like, man, like I got a day off. It's like shitty weather out. I think I want to just binge something, sit on the couch with some food, and you could just go right through it.
Okay. All right. Maybe I'll consider that. I think I put it in my queue ready to go. I just haven't committed.
Put in your queue, baby.
Okay.
Okay. Did you watch anything? I know you watched something.
Oh, I did. So I watched a Disney Plus documentary. I had this circled on the calendar for a while. Watched the day it came out. Called Music by John Williams is the name of it. And it is a documentary about the life of film composer John Williams. And my goodness, what a life it is. He's still alive, to be clear. But
what a life it continues to be.
Continues to be. Absolutely remarkable. If you have watched any movies in the last fucking 60 years, like you should watch this documentary. It takes you through his early life and how he got into music, certainly classic footage of that stuff. But then the bulk of it is just taking you through his filmography and kind of what inspired different choices and how things, projects came together. specifically him meeting Steven Spielberg and their collaborations, which are what made both of their works work. Like the movies we think of with Spielberg, they don't work without Williams' score. They just don't. And they don't work as well, at least. And then they have tons of interviews with other musicians, composers, conductors, as well as other directors. They talk to JJ, those types of things. And so you go through the history of it, and we all know he has a prolific filmography, but when you see it and hear it back to back to back, when they go from Jaws to Star Wars to Indiana Jones to Harry Potter to E.T., to all of it, just all of the things, it is so remarkable. And they basically do it in like little vignettes, like Star Wars has its own little segment, and E.T. gets its own little segment, and Close Encounters of the Third Kind gets its own little segment. And I'm telling you, like, thinking back, I know this is more of a me thing than it would be everybody, but those movies have had such an impact on me as well as everybody that the Star Wars segment, I actually like started to tear up. Like when you think about that music and that score, and then the orchestra comes in after they've talked about it for a while and how it came to be, and the orchestra comes in and hits that first note, like it makes you love Star Wars again. Like it's so powerful. And the effect that all these movies and all these scores have been a part of my life for so long, it was something else. I still remember going to the Pops as a kid when he guest conducted and they did the music from Catch Me If You Can. So just that music has been such a big part of my life. And obviously music can really tap into emotion so directly that this documentary had a profound impact on me. So highly recommend it for anybody who's into movies or music from movies or familiar with any of his work. There's also a lot of interesting discussion about the history of the Pops and Boston. There's like a little Boston element, and as well as the Tanglewood, a little element of that, because he does that regularly. And they talk about, at first, orchestras not really accepting him or accepting wanting to play movie music because they thought it was beneath them. And he was the one who kind of ushered in this era of acceptance of that. And now orchestras play movie music all the time. And he's one of the only composers making original scores still for a full orchestra. Like, not a lot of people have moved on to electronic music or smaller groups. He's still writing for full orchestration. And so he's also like a real proponent of that medium. There's a lot of elements to it. And it's just such a well put together documentary. I cannot recommend it enough.
Did they go through any of the stuff he did for the Olympics, like for the 84 and then 88 and the Atlanta Games?
There's a little segment about him getting asked to do the Olympics, and he talked about that. And then they do like a little montage of like multiple Olympics themes, plus the NBC news, nightly news he did. Like, there's so many other things he did that is just like, that are part of the cultural zeitgeist as you know it, and you don't realize it's all John Williams. It's
wild.
Something else, man. Like, it is remarkable. So Disney Plus, music by John Williams, definitely the best doc I've seen all year. One of the best movies I've seen all year. Like, just fantastic.
Love it. Okay. What are we going to watch soon? What do we got tickets for?
Tickets.
There it is.
Well, there he is.
Spacing out.
Jesus Great. Christ.
Appreciate your dedication. So I
was looking at. Yeah, I don't know.
Don't even talk. Don't even. One don't
looking
even.
Through the one, credits, bro.
One job is to fucking say tickets here and edit the show.
Were you looking through John Williams?
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, I found a thing on your mind. Fucking crazy, dude.
Crazy.
Okay. Tickets here. What do you got tickets for?
So I have a ticket to see A Real Pain, which I'm seeing in 4 hours from now as of recording time.
Okay.
That is the one that is written, I think it's written and directed by Jesse Eisenberg. And it stars him and Rory Culkin from Succession.
Kieran Culkin.
Is
that person's name?
That's what I meant. So, yeah, a little, I don't know, travel buddy comedy dramedy thing.
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, part two. Okay.
So I'm seeing that. And then, next Thursday, buckle up, boys. I have tickets to see at 2:00. I'm seeing Wicked on opening day. Then I get out of that movie, immediately turn around, walk back into the theater to see Gladiator 2 opening day. It's a little double feature.
Total fucking whiplash. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
We should get one of those, a Sigsy outing, by the way.
I mean, I imagine it would be Gladiator 2 would be of more interest to you.
Why? I fucking love the music of Wicked.
I also just know you love Gladiator, so that's fair.
Yeah, but I feel like Gladiator is going to disappoint me more than Wicked's going to disappoint me. Also, funny thing about Wicked, did you see this? Did you hear about this? It's on the toy packaging.
Yes, I did hear about this. Go ahead.
For the Target release.
Oh, yeah, the porn.
Caught that www.wicked.com is for the parody porn company and not for the actual Wicked movie production.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's a parody involved with the porn company.
I think they made like the game
porn website.
Oh, is it? Let me look it up real quick.
Yeah, but I think the pornography that they tend to make Wicked are parodies.
Wicked. Oh, okay, cinematic and parody porn from the modern age. Yep.
Good to know.
So next episode, we'll have a couple heavy hitters in there for reviews.
We got to talk about that.
What do we have to talk about?
Well, we're in 2 weeks, we'll be at Thanksgiving. It's the 28th.
And?
We got to figure out when we're recording that week.
You guys are my family, so.
All right, folks. See ya.
Thank you for listening to the Should I Go See It podcast. Make sure to follow on Instagram and send us suggestions for the IDZY segment at Should I Go See It.